My name is Manny. I am 14 years old. Today's date is January 3rd, 2020, and I'm speaking with Sharon, who is my mother. We are recording this interview in Beverly Hills, Michigan. If you could hold on to one memory from your life forever, which would it be?
Goodness, I think it's two memories. But if I have to hold on to a particular one out of the two, that will be a trip that I took with my father when I was in my 20s, very early 20s, and we drove from Michigan to St. Louis to visit family for the Christmas season. And it's rare that I will be able to have that amount of time alone with him. I mean, St. Louis is relatively a 9 to 10 hour drive, and so it was good to be with him uninterrupted and just ask a lot of questions about himself, things that I have questions about myself, spirituality, and just movies as well. So.
Oh, movies too?
Yeah, we really talked. I think he and I were very similar in a lot of ways, and so it was just good to be able to have that. So never got that opportunity again. We went to go visit him a lot, and he, of course, visited us, but the actual road trip with my father was the one thing that I always will remember.
That's cool, that's cool. Can you tell me about someone you'll always remember?
I always remember a lot of folks.
Just pick one, anyone.
I always remember my dad, but I'll move to another topic, an event that I'll remember because of a person, and that's when my mom was not. When I was 9 years old, we were living in St. Louis. She took me to go see Coretta Scott King speak at a community center in University City, Missouri. I went back recently, and that community center doesn't even exist anymore, but did not understand how massive it was at that time. Of course, she was Coretta Scott King, Martin Luther King's wife or widow, but I did not understand until much later how big that event was. And it was a crowded room. It wasn't that big of a community center. But if I'm not mistaken, she may have been talking about voting and some other things. And I just, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of what I will always remember as far as a person.
Okay. You know. Who, Coretta Scott King or your mom taking?
Coretta Scott King.
Okay. Yeah. What do you feel most grateful for in your life?
Temporary existence while being present. And so what I mean by that, let me explain, because that may sound fully loaded as an answer. You know, I've been to quite a few different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And ran across quite a few different people, grew up with a lot of different immigrants in our home. My mother was helping regarding jobs and applications and interview coaching. But what I come to realize is that I can't fully appreciate that I'm your mom or Quentin's mom or Alicia's mom unless I'm really present, like I'm really here looking at you and listening to you and understanding that. I know that life is, you live and then you die. And so some people are so caught up in other things that they don't really, they're not present often.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And so for me, I think that once I realize that, I think I'm just grateful that I have that actual mindset to even be part of it. Sorry about that.
That's all fine.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
All right. Is that
the
end of your question? Yes, sir. Yeah. All right. Can you tell me about someone who has had a big influence on your life, and what lessons did that person teach you?
I think it's interesting that these questions only have you asked for one person, and I think in the totality of life, that sometimes it's a combination of people, two or three, and sometimes, as they say, a village. So I'm going to try to narrow it down, but it's not really...
The questions don't have to be specifically one person. So you can, I'm pretty sure that not a lot of slide if you use it like a group of people.
Yeah. So I think about three people in particular because of what they've brought individually that it appears that from what people tell me that I've kind of been the sum of. And so my mother knew how to effectively network and had this compassion in her where if she saw something that was not being done, she picked up the baton and tried to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so being around her, remember had to move to the city because of some finances, and so it was the first time we had actually had to live in the city compared to the suburbs. And we had to, I was around some kids that I just was not used to the lifestyle they had grown accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
They had an awful lot of independence, and I understand that. But there were just some things that they had not been exposed to as well, even though they had an awful lot of independence. So, however she managed to start talking to people, some of these kids hadn't been to a zoo, and by this time we're like in middle school. They hadn't been to circuses. They hadn't been to concerts, and no one was like, you know, crawling around on the ground or anything like that, but it just was really just foreign to her. And so what she did is that she gathered the kids in that particular neighborhood and worked with the fire department, the police department, community organizations, and actually put on an actual parade.
Oh, really?
Single-handedly. As far as her executing and reaching out. And so from her, what I learned is how you gather people around an idea and see if you can pick up momentum to execute something for the so-called greater good.
Mm-hmm.
My father was not necessarily built like that. However, he can converse with anyone. And so what he taught me was strategy, just in general about how you make a decision based on these particular variables or these particular other factors,
mm-hmm.
and understanding there's some consequences that you'll initially may pick up, but there's some unforeseen consequences that you may have to think about. And so that helped me navigate a lot when I wanted to get pregnant with your sister at a very early age,
mm-hmm.
because I did not want to become a statistic, so I had to kind of strategize my move. Grandmother, I think three or four. My grandmother Sarah, my mom's mom, was very much about poison etiquette, and so.
What do you mean by poison etiquette?
Just about manners and just.
Oh, okay.
Wearing gloves, things that I really just could not stand when I was a kid. But these gloves.
Oh, so that's where I got it from.
Not gloves from winter, but gloves that you just wear in general on Sunday. Okay.
She did.
That's the calendar, don't worry about it. And then my other grandmother, who I call my second mother, my dad's mom, she was responsible for just kind of accepting things in life and just my faith. Like, listen, there's nothing very complicated about it. You don't need a bunch of bells and whistles. Either you believe or you don't believe, and if you don't have something good to say, keep it to yourself. Just try to do right, but protect
mm-hmm.
yourself. So this is very kind of just very, and that has kind of been an ongoing current within me, which is why I'm not very much of a complainer in
mm-hmm.
general. So it's four people. So sorry about that long-windedness.
It's all fine. You're giving me more time. I'll probably get more credit. Do you have a favorite memory of me?
Oh, of you, my gosh. That's so many. So when
you can pick two or three.
I got pregnant with you. We were trying to be very careful because the pregnancy before you, that child didn't make it. And so
what were we going to name that child?
If it was a girl, we were going to name her Elena.
Also, I would have had a girl. Oh.
And if it was a boy, I was looking at Sebastian, but your father would not have it. So, I...
Sebastian. I don't know if that fits with Sebastian Stevens. I don't know if that fits.
It's SNS. And so, well, the nickname would have been Seb or Sean. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I remember two things. It's so many because, like I said, I was talking to you while you were in my stomach.
Uh-huh.
And when you arrived, it was such a big deal because you were the first grandchild to be born, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Alicia and Janae have different fathers.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So you were the first grandchild to be born. And so when Dad went out to go tell everybody after you came, they were in the waiting room that you were a boy. They all jumped up and was like, yeah! I'm sorry he didn't record that, but it was Grandma, Grandpa, Uncle Wes, Tony, you know, all them. So it was... your arrival, two things that I had to come to understand about you is that one in particular, when I was asking you how your brain felt, this is before we knew anything about a diagnosis or anything like that, and you probably had to be 4 years old. And so you were already having these very interesting conversations at a very early age. And so I was starting to worry about your just overall emotional health. So I would just be checking in with you to see how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, my brain feels like chaos. And I said to myself, I couldn't possibly know what chaos means. And so I said, well, what does chaos mean? You know? And then you said, you know, chaotic, disorganized, like a lot of things going on at one time. Like, there's three televisions on, and they're all on at one time.
I remember that.
And I remember the hairs on my arms standing up because it's like, oh, he does know. And if this is how he's feeling, this is a problem, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's when we started to kind of like, well, let's get some things checked out. One of the other moments that really was not a great moment, but it's what I remember, was funny, is that we took you to go get your pictures done, and you did not understand what was going on. You know what I mean?
With Grandpa?
No. This is you know, you're 2 years old, maybe three, and the person, the photographer, is talking to you because that's their job. They're trying to get you comfortable, and you just are not sitting in the poses at all. And then finally, after an exhausting 20 minutes of you just not doing it, they had a stool. You hid behind the stool and then peeked out from the side of the stool, and the photographer said, we're just going to take that picture. And that it wasn't a picture that they actually had plan, but it's a picture that they just decided they were going to do. And it turned out fine, but we got a picture of it in the photo.
Okay. I'm definitely going to look
like
at that.
That was not the pose at all, but they just like, we give. And when you, the last one thing I remember is that you were seven and we were driving down, I want to say Woodward or Greenfield, and you were always noticing people and just kind of keep quiet. And you had said, the man that's homeless. And I said, yeah. He said, he has on a coat, he has on pants, but he doesn't have on any socks.
And is that how it got started?
Yeah. And so I said, well, yeah, he probably didn't have any. And he said, well, I want to make sure that I get him some socks. And so that's how that sock initiative started, because you saw a guy out there, and I think we saw him more than one time. It was a few times we saw him, and I believe you must have been observing what he was wearing when we were at the stoplight or intersection. So there's a lot of different great memories I remember about you. You know what I mean?
So I've been doing that thing for 7 years?
Mm-hmm.
Holy. All right.
Yeah.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, 7 years.
Jeez. Okay. All right. And what are you proudest of in your life? This is the last question. You already know the answer, but yeah. I want to.
I'm proud of you guys. I'm proud of you, your brother, and now your sister, what she's doing with her life. But you are, there are things that you have worked on, even though we've had our talks, some things you've managed to really realize yourself. And you understand about evolution and maturity, but also that there are things that you are going to have to throughout your life consistently reflect on and put things on pause to kind of examine yourself.
I understand that.
Part of what gets us in trouble is that we become so disconnected from examining ourselves because we're so busy living life. And so I understand the human element of it. But just kind of what you've been able to do, you know, we were depending on who we talk to, a couple of dismal things, you know, I mean, like, he's not doing this, you know, when you were younger, and he's not doing that, but yet you managed to have people who believed in you, the majority of your teachers and principals.
Set Miss Dirty.
But I mean, she's like one out of like 15. And so, we just, and also just you understanding that you don't have to take care of everything on your own or not telling people about things. I think that's one of the greatest things I'm proud of you about, that you learned to start talking about things a lot more to kind of help with not just how you feel, but just getting some different perspectives. And so
that is a good thing, actually, because if you only have like one point of view, you're going to be like, and then if you, let's say you think you're
massively skewed, but go ahead.
Say like in an argument, you only have like one perspective, and you're just going to be like downright stubborn and think you're right if you don't understand where the other person is coming from.
Right. I think that's what I admired about my father, is that even though he taught me about strategy, I watched my father talk down a guy who was schizophrenic, on drugs, and just was about to do some bad stuff.
What's schizophrenic
mean? It's a mental health disorder. We have a couple of people in the family. Where they see people who aren't there.
So
like I'm talking to you,
okay.
But I'm not here.
So like you're dead? Or you're just not
in
there?
It's an imaginative person.
Oh, that's terrifying.
You know, or you hear voices. Your Uncle William, you know, heard voices very early on. My dad told me as early as 19. But my father could talk people down just because of the cadence of his speech. Like, he kind of talked a little slower, like Billy B. Williams.
Oh, right? So that's what I'm going to get. Okay.
And then he also just kept his tone down. Even if he was angry, he was very much about trying to level the conversation. I mean, he's worked with incarcerated men who were incarcerated because they were felons in Chicago. Yeah, the Hope House. And so those were
Oh, was he a cop or something?
No, he was a cop when he was in the military.
Oh, yeah, he was in the military. I forget about that.
But he ran the Hope House, which was a transition program for men to be able to get back into the world. And
so it was like a rehab center?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they were felons. These were not people who were misdemeanors. These were people who've done some assaults or murders and stuff like that. I've seen him. I mean, his thighs helped him, obviously.
Yeah. Was he like swole or just like big?
He was 6. That's where you get your height from. He was 6'1".
Okay.
And he knew karate, and he knew how to box in wrestling because he was on those teams when he was younger. But
I guess I should start working that too.
But he managed. He could talk. He managed to stay calm in very, very volatile, intense situations. And I remember watching him do that on more than one occasion, and remember as a child thinking, I want to learn how to do that. And so that's what's important as well, because if you think you're right and I think I'm right and we come to the table, okay, what are we really going to get done?
Yeah.
There needs to be a person that can talk things down and also kind of look at it from different perspectives. You know what I mean?
I'm glad I have that superpower now, because I didn't have that before. And I was like, I remember, like, before 2019 even happened, I didn't understand a thing. And then I went to Berkshire and I started understanding, like, everything. So, like, I guess public school isn't all that bad.
No, yeah, I don't.
ahead. Like Roper, I still like want to stay at the school. Well, at least now I have, I'll say, I've definitely evolved, but like I'm not, I've gained a lot of wisdom, not just from the school, but like from talks with you, with Dad, and like other people as well, and then my friends as well. Just understanding, like, and now I get like a whole new view of certain problems, and I know how to like combat them without like, you know, any altercations or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's like way easier now, honestly, because I didn't understand a thing before, but now my brain is expanded.
Yeah, I love that, and so I'm very proud about that when it comes to you. So,
hear that, Matt? My mom's proud of me.
So, yeah, that's it. And just kind of what I think the proud moment for me also is just kind of realizing that I have a voice. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's been able to help as well. So.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you for the interview.
You're welcome, and thank you for interviewing me.
All right, no problem.